The following content is sponsored by Atlantis Sports Clubs and does not reflect the views of WATD Radio. It's Friends with Benefits on 95.9 WATD, exploring relationships, social issues, sports, and life stories. Be a part of the show at 781-837-4900. This is Brian Stratton's Friends with Benefits with your hosts, Paul Kearney, Gabe Sirota, Joe Coletti, and Bob Anderson.
Okay, we are Friends with Benefits, WATD Radio, another week of COVID-19. Our first guest tonight is Reed Plimpton, who is the Northeast Telehealth Resource Center Project Manager at Medical Care Development, Inc. Reed worked with Danielle Lauder at the Northeast Telehealth Resource Center in Maine, and she was one of our first telehealth guests on this radio show. We interviewed Danielle last February in 2019, when telehealth was not a main topic in healthcare, but it is now. And today, with Reed's help, their phone is ringing off the hook, and we need their guidance more than ever. Also on the phone is our show's sponsor, Michelle Hager from Blue Cirrus. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Joe.
Great having you with us tonight. Great guest with Reed Plimpton from the NETRC. Reed, are you there? How are you doing?
Hey, guys. I'm doing pretty well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, great.
Absolutely.
We've been discussing the advantages of telehealth in fighting COVID-19 with doctors and hospitals from around the country on this show, and we've had some great interviews. You're with the NETRC, New England Telehealth Resource Center, covering the region, the 8-state region, which includes New Jersey. How has it impacted our region? What are you seeing?
We've seen just a monumental increase over the last 6, 7, 8 weeks, whatever it's been now during the public health emergency. As I would assume is true across the nation, it's been large increases in every modality of telehealth. And with that, our job to provide technical assistance and virtual trainings has only increased. The early math comparing it to last year showed a difference somewhere around an 830% increase.
Wow.
In the number of questions and assistance. So, yeah, it was a crazy couple of weeks, but we were so excited to be able to do it. And it's a testament just to the drive and motivation of our providers across our region, how quickly systems across the 8 states that we work in were able to stand things up if they weren't doing it, or expand services that they were already providing.
Reed, did you have any, I totally understand, that having such a great, experience to be able to help people. Did you have any story that you think that kind of sticks in your mind that you're thinking that I'm so glad we were able to help them?
Yeah. So we've gotten to see some really neat stories on both ends of the spectrum, right? Like, I think it's been impressive to see folks that that my predecessors in this TRC helped years ago reach out to me on, five levels deeper of telehealth expansion. But also, like, watching some of the behavioral health providers that maybe did not have the most permissible reimbursement structure before across the state stand it up. I think one of the most powerful examples of how quickly providers are trying to meet the need for me was when we started to launch our state-by-state office hours that we were hosting with in collaboration with various state health departments and entities. When we hosted the first one for Maine, it was I think we gave 2 or 3 days notice in terms of being able to notify health systems about it. It was a lunchtime in the middle of the week, and we had nearly 1,000 providers across the state join us for
that
conversation.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Just a massive need. You can see they're just drawn to it. Interesting.
And I think one of the things that's been nice is that it hasn't necessarily, petered out, whether folks have either come back because they have just this niche of their population that they're not quite able to get to, whether it's, they can't get the consent form to them because they're not on a web portal or anything else, or, folks just continuing to try to find ways to do it. So a lot of our New York City hospitals, found ways to use specialist video consults across their sites so they didn't have to increase their providers' exposure traveling, but that they could still get that expertise in various different buildings.
So Reed, you've been offering office hours and allowing people to call in and ask questions, and you've been giving your expertise and answering questions. Is that true?
Yeah. So I can't take full credit. Netrick's a multi-headed team, and we all sort of have our topics that we're interested in. And so there are certain days that we only one of us will be there, and that's a topic that we're covering. But for most of them, once or twice a week across the eight states in our region, we're offering just open access office hours to the providers through our video conferencing platform, where they can show up and ask reimbursement questions, licensure considerations, questions around workflows. And also, I mean, one of the neater parts about it has been the opportunity to share stories, success, I guess, in innovation.
Yeah, tell me more about the COVID-19 video visits.
Yeah, so our collaborators in Ettrick are at the University of Vermont Health Network, and that's part of the reason why I know of this story. The health network up there at UVM is 7 or 8 sites, I believe, across that part of Vermont, and they, within a week's time, worked across the needed departments in all of those sites to identify the equipment they'd need, procure it, and then establish a hardwired tablet with a video visit platform in each of the rooms within the COVID wings in each of the facilities. So those tablets couldn't leave the room, but they were hardwired to be able to, auto dial to the nurse as soon as you hit join meeting, for those of you that are familiar with the video platforms. Mm-hmm. Or they also gave the meeting ID to the patient's families, which I think is one of the neater aspects. So it allowed that personal connection for the patients to their families that I think we're all aware they can't get due to social distancing in that scenario.
Right. Right. It's interesting because you mentioned UVM. We had Rebecca Freeman on our last show, who's the chief nursing informatics officer there. And she talked about some of the programs they've been working on and also the effort to virtualize all their staff, to have all their staff working remotely, and just a heavy lift that not just the healthcare workers are doing that are frontline providers, but also the IT folks that are actually ensuring that all the other infrastructure in the hospital is working. So you guys are doing a great job and assisting them in their efforts as well.
Yeah, Rebecca was a great interview.
That's a great point, Michelle. I think when I mentioned procurement, I think what people don't necessarily think about there is that includes the folks that, are typically in charge of ordering the hospital supplies, because they were the ones that knew who to get a hold of to get the tablets and the clamps and the things at the scale they needed quickly. And that's what was one of the cooler parts about it, was to be able to see a system so quickly, mobilize a unit of multidiscipline programs.
Yep, absolutely.
Karina, I was on your website, netrc.org, and I was looking at your spring conference, and it looks like that's being canceled. What are you going to do now for conference? Are you going to put something else together?
Yeah, great question. Unfortunately, due to the, the necessary health precautions, I shouldn't say unfortunate because we were happy to do so. Netrick has chosen to cancel our standard 2-day annual regional conference in the in-person capacity. So we had hoped to be in New Hampshire in the first week of June this upcoming summer. But we are currently in the process of transitioning that to some sort of virtual presence and virtual events. It's been quite a whirlwind to adapt to this program and explore how to fit it to the virtual modality. But there's a lot of exciting possibilities there, and it's something that we're passionate to do in order to provide the education opportunities to our constituents and keep everybody healthy via social distancing. We've been exploring how to best host these with a couple of the other TRCs across the nation. And I think that that's going to allow for another, unique opportunity out of this, because it'll be providers providing expertise to other providers from across the nation on similar topics.
Well, that sounds great. I know Michelle and I are always interested in those conferences and a virtual conference with other TRCs in surrounding regions. That sounds great, Reed. What do you think, Michelle? Do you think that's something that we'd be interested in sponsoring or attending?
Oh, absolutely. We always support all the resource centers, and especially the New England TRC. They're, I should call it Northeast. I think it is not technically New England, but I think you guys do some great work up there, as all the TRCs do. But it's good for folks in the New England area and even across the country that may be listening in on the show that, this is available to them. And these are great telehealth education sessions. So even if you are a patient, not necessarily implementing telehealth or part of the process of putting a program together, even if you're a potential patient, you just want to learn something about it. It's a great conference to see what's happening in the world of healthcare and how innovation is coming to the healthcare space and how we're going to provide care in the future. So you guys are doing great, great work up there, Reed. We're happy to partner with you all, and we look forward to seeing you face to face when we all can in the next conference. But we'll definitely be there for the virtual one.
There you go, Reed. When do you think this will happen?
Well, I'm excited to hear you guys are going to be a part. I should have mentioned one of the things that I know I have referenced to you that we're still exploring how best to suit, but we hope to be adding a new aspect to our conferences this year as part of the virtual thing, in which we work with some of the industry partners like Blue Series to interview them for organizations to have a little bit of a better perspective as to what all these different industry partners across the world telehealth can do. And to answer your question, Joe, I think we are hoping to host a few different events throughout the months of May, June, and maybe July. I say that because there are a few national virtual events that we would like to attend as well during June, and we don't want to make people double book themselves.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, so for anyone who's interested in telehealth and looking for extensive information and resources, you can find it on the NETRC website at netrc.org, which includes a comprehensive research library, current telehealth news articles and events, training resources, or you can use their toll-free number at 1-800-379-2021. Is that correct, Reed?
That's the one. I'm looking forward to hearing from folks.
Okay, Reed, I appreciate your time to join our show tonight. I look forward to your virtual conference this summer and hope you stay healthy and safe.
Thank you, Reed.
It's fun as always. Thank you both for having us. I hope you have a great evening and stay healthy.
Thank you. Say hello to Danielle.
Yeah, say hello to Danielle for us. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight with us. This is WATD Radio 95.9 FM, Friends with Benefits. We will be right back after this quick message from our sponsors with Lauren Faison from Tallahassee Memorial.
Hey, Joe, please tell me about your new company, Blue Series Consulting. This is a new way I can actually stay home and receive quality healthcare by using today's technology?
Yeah, thanks. It's called telehealth. It's sweeping the nation. It's great. It saves lives, it saves time, and it saves money.
Great, but why isn't my hospital offering it to me?
Well, hospitals are being flooded with new software vendors and technology, making it difficult for hospitals to make clear decisions and choose which telehealth program is right for them. In fact, Blue Series Consulting can bring telehealth to local hospitals here in New England. We have a track record of providing skilled advisors, clinicians, and project leaders to support your hospital and help them accomplish a quality telehealth program.
Hey, Joe, how do I find out more information?
Thanks, Paul. You can go online at blue-siris.com. That's blue as in the color, dash, Siris, C-I-R-R-U-S, as in the cloud, .com, and find all of our company information online. Blue Series saves lives, saves time, and saves money.
We're back with Friends with Benefits, WATD 95.9 FM. Tonight's guest is Lauren Faison, who is the SLA, Regional Development, Population Health, and Telemedicine at Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare. Hi, Lauren.
How are you?
I'm great. And Michelle from Blue Series, the show's sponsors, on the phone with us. How are you, Michelle?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing really well tonight. I really appreciate Lauren being on the show, and I'm looking forward to hearing all about what's happening in her area and responding to COVID and what she's doing with telehealth. So thanks for having me.
Yes, always. You know, Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare is a private, not-for-profit community healthcare system committed to transforming care, advancing health, and improving lives. They serve a 17-county region in North Florida and South Georgia. TMH is comprised of a 772-bed acute care hospital, a psychiatric hospital, multiple specialty care centers, 3 residency programs, 32 affiliated physician practices, and partnerships with doctors, Memorial Hospital, Florida State University College of Medicine, University of Florida Health, Ames Memorial Hospital, and Wolfson Children's Hospital. So, Lauren, speaking of community healthcare, how are you doing, and how is TMC handling and responding to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I personally am doing very well. I'm tired, like everybody else, because us in healthcare are working very hard right now. But I will tell you, it has been a story of collaboration and innovation as we've looked at how we respond to this, watching healthcare providers across our community pull together and figure out how to maximize our resources and protect our community has been a wonderful exercise. And when we talk about telehealth, if there was ever a moment, if there was ever a community that was ready and primed to really implement the practice of telehealth to deal with many of the issues we face through this pandemic, it is us.
I read on your website, tmh.org, the three steps for fighting COVID-19 was to plan, prepare, and prevent. How does this work?
So for the telehealth, so for this plan, it was, how do we plan for the worst case scenario? How do we pull together our resources? How do we prepare our clinical resources, our beds, you know, all those things that you've seen in the national news, the ventilators, the supplies, all of that. How do we ramp those things up to plan and prepare for what might happen? But how do we prevent from us getting in that worst case scenario? And it was about community education. It was about unified messaging, pulling together our healthcare plans, you know, our other healthcare providers in town, and really, you know, connecting our PR departments and our education and outreach efforts. So we had one message. We opened an old office plaza that's our city just bought out. Our mayor opened it up to us and said, here, use this area. And we came up with a community screening site. And so all of us put staff resources out there. We have, you know, it's a drive-through, you know, screening. And so they can, you know, anybody from any physician practice can come. And we had one fax number where orders could be faxed. We had people out there, you know, collecting samples. And for us, for we had community residents that showed up that didn't have it. They don't have a doctor and they didn't have an order to get a COVID test. We had telemedicine doctors available there that could do the screening on site and see if a test was warranted or not. And then they could still get it. So we wanted to make sure we were taking care of our most vulnerable citizens, those without, you know, a primary care and with health insurance. And we've had, you know, several hundred people a day coming through this site.
Wow.
And it's really helped keep people out of the ERs, keep people from, you know, overburdening their primary care practices and help making sure they got that testing and, you know, making sure they were self-quarantining, keeping everyone safe. And so we still have that going on today. Luckily, the numbers are going down, but we've been doing that for weeks since this started. We ramped it up in a matter of days. We also do the same thing, and we have our ER at the hospital, and we have a freestanding ER, and we have drive-through screening stations there as well. So if you show up at the ER, we're stopping you in your car before you even come in the parking garage, saying, why are you here? If you're chest pain, you're going straight to the ER. If you have cough, fever, you know, COVID-like symptoms, we were diverting you in a different direction. And we were literally taking your information while you're in the car, taking your vitals. Again, we have like a Surface Pro tablet on a cart. We roll it right up to the window. You see a physician. They go through the screening. We have digital stethoscope, you know, if they want to listen to your heart and lung sounds. The nurses were taking the vitals out there. And then we were able to determine if they needed a COVID test or a flu swab. We were doing those things while they were in the car and discharging them, and they never got out of their car. So not only was that great for the patient, but it was great for other people in the ER and colleagues and our providers to keep everybody safe. And so we've been doing that again for weeks. Yeah. And, you know, it has saved a lot of people. We have identified a lot of positive patients that way. And we were able to, they were able to get the services they need, get the education they need of how to take care of themselves, but not be sitting in a, you know, ER waiting room with lots of other
people. Right, right.
Some strong work, Lauren. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really quick. And luckily, we, you know, as you know, we've been sort of on this bandwagon for telehealth and how important it is for a long time. So we had the infrastructure already here that we were able to ramp up. Now, we've quickly found webcams were in short supply. We're still waiting on orders. And we had to, well, okay, who's got iPads? Who's got, you know, tablets? Yeah. It was an all call in the hospital to figure out what devices we had. And we quickly pulled together this diverse team to deploy it in lots of areas that had never used telehealth before. But we were able to scale it up easily. We were able to quickly train physicians and nurses, inpatient, outpatient, ER physicians. And now this is fully being utilized across our entire enterprise. And even for those folks that may have been a little weary about telemedicine, but, well, I don't really need to do that. I don't need to do it. Suddenly, it was the only way they were able to see their patients. They were ready to learn. And so from the nurses to the medical assistants to the physicians to, you know, the office staff and the, you know, the staff who are doing the, you know, medical records, everybody had to figure this out very quickly. And I don't know that we'll ever go back to the old way. I think we will definitely, you know, obviously people can still go back to their doctor's offices, but we're going to see this hybrid model because the best thing that's happened through this is the patients see the value in it. And I believe they will continue to demand some level of, if I'm just coming in for test results, why can't I do it virtually? So that, I think that's been, you know, one of the plus sides of this terrible situation we find ourselves in, is that we've seen this, you know, asset.
Innovation.
Yes, they've embraced it. So
yeah, we had another facility that we've been working with that said they had to convert over almost 7,000 providers, you know, in a week or something like that. Was that the volume that you were
now,
looking at?
Now, we don't have 7,000. We're Tallahassee, but we onboarded about 400 primary care and specialty care practices in about a week. You know, we, within a few days time, we had billed out hundreds of dollars of telemedicine visits, hundreds of thousands of dollars of telemedicine visits. And again, these were folks that were very set in their way they were doing their practices. They were happy with the way things were going, but they realized quickly they had to stay connected to their patients. And quite frankly, from the business angle, this was the only opportunity for them to get revenue for a while.
Right.
So, you know, this was important for a lot of reasons, most importantly about taking care of the patients, but it was, you know,
also a business
open and
reality
revenue coming in. And I really am very thankful for the way that the insurance providers and CMS stepped up.
Yeah. So what's your, I'm curious as to know, what's your prediction related to that, Lauren? Do you think, I agree with you that CMS and the private payers and, you know, even the state Medicaid systems have really stepped up to do the coverage of telehealth. What do you think is going to happen? You have some predictors for post?
I think the immediate reaction will be, let's go back to where we were. Let's block it off again. But I think they'll both the providers and the patients are going to go, no. We want to keep this. I really believe we have to advocate for a hybrid model, that where it makes sense, we can see patients virtually and make sure they get that care. Because we know for many people, the transportation to come to a 10-minute doctor's visit is expensive, or sometimes just can't happen because
not
of
possible.
Lack of transportation. So I really, that's what we keep talking about. Of course, people want to see their doctor in person again. Of course, we want to go back and do things like we used to. But I think this hybrid approach is really going to be the right way. And I hope that through this experience, they've realized this didn't bankrupt every, you know, it didn't keep it, you know, empty their pockets through telemedicine, that this is affordable and it does make sense and it does keep people out of the hospital and it does keep them out of the ER, and that saves everybody time and money and helps the patients most importantly.
And they didn't see unnecessary visits, right? Because that's always been the payer's concerns, that there would be unnecessary visits. So
Exactly. Yep. Very good.
Interesting.
Lauren, excellent job. Have you taken advantage of any FCC funding grants?
We have applied. We haven't heard yet. So we did apply. It was a first come, first serve. So we submitted a couple weeks ago. So we have our fingers crossed and hope that it comes. But I will tell you, I am so proud of the way our local community has stepped up. Mm-hmm. Our foundation put out a call and said, we want to expand telemedicine, but it costs money, you know, and without the revenue coming in to start, you had to have startup funds. Right. And people, we were asking for sponsorships of telemedicine equipment and carts. And our community stepped up in a way I could have never imagined. And within 6 weeks, we raised over $200,000 in private donations just to say, hey, I believe in this. And yes, I want to keep care going. Let me donate. Where we have patients isolated, we have these carts in there. So if a physician needs to do a consult, they don't have to get full PPE and walk in that room. Right. They can do it virtually from home or their clinic or wherever they are. And so we've just seen so many uses. And, you know, suddenly you get demands you didn't even know about. We have spiritual care that's still happening for our patients in the hospital.
Right.
We have music therapy. We have, you know, all these ancillary services that are a critical part of our care that we've always provided. There's not a thing that we used to do that we can't do now and do it virtually. We do pet therapy virtually, believe it or not.
Wow.
And, you know, instead of the dogs walking around the hospital, they're seeing them virtually, and it brings a smile to a patient. You never know what impact that smile might have on their outcomes.
That's right.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like many health systems, we have no visitors right now. And there's nothing worse than when your loved one's in the hospital and you can't go see them and you can't give them a hug, you can't be part of their care. Well, now we can roll a cart in the room and suddenly their family's right there.
That's not only a benefit for the patient and the family, but also the caregivers, because they're really becoming the family. And that's very mentally stressful as you're caring for someone. So that's awesome. You guys are doing a fantastic job.
We has been a full effort. You know, everybody had to get on board very quickly. And we're still finding new things as we start to, you know, ramp up some elective procedures, but families can't be there at discharge. You know, now we're going, okay, they're having a total shoulder replacement. We need to bring that family in and show their family how to care. So the physical therapists are going to be on the screen and the patient family in the car on their cell phone and learning at the discharge just as they would in the hospital, but now they're going to do it in a safer way. And so it's, they're constantly, now the staff are coming up with new uses where I used to be throwing use cases at them. Yeah. They're now saying, hey, can I use telemedicine for this? I had a cardiologist, you know, text me at 7 o'clock this morning. Hey, there's a patient I need to see here. How can I do this? You know, and so suddenly you see all this thought
momentum.
And not having to sell it anymore. It has sold itself.
Yep.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I know you've been trying to expand your telehealth program down there, and you've done a great job and staying on it. So this has been probably, you know, opened up a lot of eyes and a lot of support in Tallahassee.
Yep.
And
yeah.
I just want to ask you one more question. Do you have any tips for other hospitals who are thinking or starting to develop their telehealth program?
I think it has to be a multidisciplinary integrated approach. It's not a technology project. It's not a pilot project over here. You really have to have all aspects involved, whether it's from the medical records, the billing, the physicians, the technology, the physicians, the nurses. You have to have everybody understand it and understand their piece in it, because it really impacts everybody. And so you can't have, it can't be an isolated effort in one department.
That's fantastic. I just want to say, Joe, thank you for bringing Lauren onto the show tonight, because you know that I have a special connection to that hospital and to Lauren and the Florida State School of Medicine there. And so it's exciting to see all the great work that they're doing in North Florida.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is Lauren Faison from Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare. Lauren, I appreciate your time today. We always want to provide our listeners with expert advice such as yours on this show, and I appreciate your answers to explain how hospitals can use telehealth to fight against COVID-19. Many thanks to your sponsor, Michelle Hager. Thank you for being on the call and sharing the opportunity and information about telehealth and how we can help stakeholders throughout the country with planning and implementing their telehealth programs. Have a great night, and thanks again for your time on the show. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Michelle. We'll be back.
This is Bob Anderson, owner of Upper Entertainment, promoter and agent for some of New England's best musical and comedy talent. If you want the very best acts at your clubs, weddings, parties, or private events, look no further than Upper Entertainment. You can reach us at 781-249-0113. Call Upper Entertainment at 781-249-0113.
We are back with Friends with Benefits and our show sponsor, Michelle Hager from Blue Cirrus Consulting. So far, the show has been great. What do you think, Michelle?
Wow, we've had some great guests today. And I think that, you know, we've just been sharing information over the last few months on telehealth, and glad to have Eric coming up as our next guest. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And Lauren Faison from Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare gave us a lot of insight on dealing with COVID-19 and using telehealth strategy to providing healthcare. Also, I want to mention, you can find these recordings in this recording of this show on our Blue Cirrus website, blue-cirrus.com, and visit our Knowledge Tsunami page to find a list of recorded shows during this pandemic. They've come out great, and we've had some great guests. But you're right, Michelle, our next guest tonight is Eric Wicklund from Xtelligent Healthcare Media, which is located right here in Danvers, Mass. Eric received his BA in creative writing and journalism at the University of Maine. His early success was at Hims Media, and that led him to join Xtelligent Media in 2015, where he has been the editor of mhealthintelligence.com, an online news site focused on mHealth, telehealth, and telemedicine, and covers healthcare news and updates all over the country. You'll find Eric's articles on LinkedIn and other social media sites. Their advanced targeting technology and results-oriented advertising options deliver clients' content and messaging to the right audience at the right time. Their proven solutions help achieve thought leadership, branding, and lead generation goals. Hi, Eric. How you doing? Thank you for joining the show.
I am doing fine. Thank you, Joe. I'm glad to be on with you tonight.
Oh, great. Thank you. You know, we've been discussing telehealth on this show for the last 20 or so months, and tonight's show on telehealth is more important than ever. We are informing our listeners of the benefits of receiving care in remote areas and even in your own home.
So Eric, please tell us about some of your experiences working with Xtelligent Healthcare Media and some of the services you offer.
Okay, well, as you mentioned, my site is mhealthintelligence.com. It's one of several run by Xtelligent Healthcare Media, which is based right in Danvers. My site focuses on mHealth, telehealth. There are a lot of different phrases and terms for it. The most popular right now are telehealth and mHealth, but we also call it connected health, telemedicine, e-health, so many different things. I focus on how healthcare providers, hospitals, health systems, doctors, clinics, everybody, how they use the technology to improve patient care and as well as improving workloads for physicians so that the technology is benefiting not only the patient but the provider. I've been doing this for at least a decade. Working specifically within the telehealth place, my contacts are all over the country. I work with health systems, interview them near and far, looking for the latest and the best uses of the technology, and it's an especially busy time because of the COVID-19 crisis. It just seems that there's a never ending amount of stories of how healthcare providers are now using this technology and how patients are benefiting.
I agree. Your articles are great. I read them daily. There's not a lack of research there. So great job getting those stories and putting those together for everyone to read and sharing that knowledge. And I know the pandemic has certainly pushed telehealth into the forefront of healthcare. So that must help.
So telehealth adoption just jumped up incredibly. We're hearing stories of, hospitals and health systems going from 300 video visits in 3 years to 300 video visits in 1 hour. Just ramping up incredibly huge traffic. At the same time, we had Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS, state governments relax the rules for telehealth, allowing more and more providers to use services and be reimbursed for them. As well as to use phones, basically, just, get on the phone and talk to a patient, something that had not been allowed before and had not been reimbursed before. Now, what we're seeing going into the future is that, everybody's using telehealth now. Telehealth is popular. I mean, you're hearing it mentioned on the nightly news and in New York Times and so on and so forth. It's here to stay. And it's going to be interesting to see how, once we come out of this crisis, how that adoption, how that momentum remains when the rules start easing back to normal and some of these barriers are basically brought back up again after the emergency actions are concluded. How will providers continue to use telehealth? How will patients continue to want to use telehealth? What will we see in what's going to be called the new normal?
I agree. That's going to be interesting to follow. And I want to take our audience to a recent article you wrote Monday that spoke about a new bill before Congress that makes it easier for Medicare to reimbursement for telehealth that is aimed toward federally qualified health centers and rural health clinics. Why is this so important, and why is it taking so long for Medicare to catch up on covering telehealth? Do you see this as a long-term solution?
It's funny. That's a very specific example and a great example of the advantages of telehealth. We have what are called federally qualified health centers, FQHCs, rural health centers, RHCs. They serve, they're located all over the country. There's thousands of them. They serve generally underinsured or uninsured populations. You'll find them in many rural areas, low-income areas, serving low-income populations. And they traditionally haven't been able to use telehealth because, yes, CMS does not reimburse them for using telehealth, or at least hadn't prior to a couple of years ago. The CMS argument is they just hadn't gotten around to seeing enough evidence that telehealth was an improvement over in-person care in these clinics. So they were reluctant to extend the network to those types of centers and approve them for being what's called a distant site for telehealth. There had been some movement over the past couple of years in allowing these types of clinics to use telehealth in certain cases, in certain situations. With COVID, that everything was just blown out of the water. They they're using telehealth as much as any other healthcare provider right now, not only to treat patients infected with the virus, but just to continue normal care at a time when in-person visits are frowned upon. Unless it's emergency, you're not gonna go to a doctor's office or a clinic. You've gotta find some way of continuing the care management during this time. Now, with COVID and with these bills coming through the legislature right now, the idea is to keep these centers at the forefront of using telehealth and enabling them to continue to use telehealth once the emergency is over. You know, so a lot of these emergency measures are gonna ease up and FQHCs and rural health clinics are going to go right back to being where they were before.
Also in your mHealth article on Tuesday, you mentioned Senator Brian Schatz, Democrat from Hawaii. You wrote an article, he's a longtime supporter of connected health adoption, is asking Congress for $2 billion for rural broadband access. Is this something you think has a chance of passing? Do I need to call my state rep and inform him? We've had Patrick Kearney on the show, so This is interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. Massachusetts had long been considered one of the slower states to adopt telehealth. We've got some great hospitals and health systems in the state that are using it. But some of the rules, some of the coverage just hadn't been keeping up with it. Senator Schatz is a rock star in the telehealth world. Part of it is because, you know, he comes from Hawaii, and Hawaii is a perfect example of mm-hmm. how to use telehealth, because you're talking about care delivered over islands. It's not easy to get to the hospital or to the doctor's office out there. Telehealth is a necessity in places like Hawaii. Another good place is example. Another good example is Maine, my own state, where you've got a huge rural population. I mean, we're just 2 million people up here, but we've got huge distances to travel to get to the nearest hospital, the nearest doctor's office, and so on and so forth.
Even beyond distance, sometimes you're not able to do it because of the snow and the inability to get there just because of the weather.
Yes. Anybody who tries to drive up here during the winter will realize that. I mean, you're watching out for snow. You're watching out for the occasional random moose. You're also dealing with, populations on islands. Now, in a rural population such as this, broadband connectivity isn't the best. I mean, I live in southern Maine, and my house sometimes sometimes I have trouble using my own cell phone because I'm in a dead zone. And one of the foundations of telehealth is that you've got to have a good connection. You've got to have a good online connection in order be able to deliver healthcare. You don't want a visit cutting out or dropping. You don't want, a patient talk to a doctor and all of a sudden he's lost. That can't happen. So you've got to have good connectivity. And in many rural parts of the country, broadband isn't assured. Connectivity isn't reliable.
If you decided to, that's a good point, Eric. And even if folks decided to rely and think, well, I could just use my cellular connection, often in places like Maine, I know there's only a limited amount of providers connections in Maine. So some areas, have limited providers that can provide.